Notebook up.
Welcome to our live recording.
We're in the gorgeous hills of La Cañada, which is spelled like La Canada also, which is outside of, like, in the hills of Los Angeles. And we're so excited to be here. We have a room full of friends in here.
Friends and fam.
So good to see these faces.
I was going to say an unnamed location.
I like La Canada.
We're that much closer.
Yeah, exactly.
To universal healthcare.
It makes just it easier to pretend.
I feel it.
Yeah.
I feel healthier being here.
I don't. I have the flu. This is like the fifth time of me being sick this season. So sorry, I have a cough drop in my mouth.
I'm a carrier.
Don't hug me tonight is what I've been telling everyone, which feels very sad because this is our last episode and I want to hug everyone. So I want to give like virtual hugs to everyone. But Zara said she'll hug me.
Yeah.
So
I listened to an episode on pandemics.
And what you learn?
That we're supposed to be there for each other.
Oh. Have you been?
I have more stuff going on with my thyroid. That's fun.
Oh, no.
But actually, it was really validating because, okay, so for like the last 3 months, I've been like, what is my problem? I would like to be positive because, you know, the news and everything helps. I'm just trying. I'm trying to like rev that up in myself, but I could like hear all the like thyroid thoughts. If you don't know thyroid thoughts, they sound a lot like 2016. And I was like, man, I need to get it together. I'm just a really anxious person all the time. Is it the coffee? Is it because I don't sleep? No, my doctor was like, you're not absorbing your medication.
So oh, no.
Yeah, it's like you're just functioning on half a thyroid.
Oh, no.
Yeah. But bonus, my throat's all healed now.
That's good.
And as an actor, I just want to like put out into the world, I have had my throat slit in real life. And so I have that actor's province now. Game of Thrones is over, but there's always a reboot. So I've been doing good.
Oh, that's good. It doesn't sound good, but okay. I don't feel like I should congratulate you on that.
Congratulate away.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Been doing good.
So we have a bunch of things to talk about. We have some memories to talk about. And of course, I have to talk about the elections.
Oh, yeah.
But before we talk about the elections, there's a special day coming up, Valentine's Day.
It's so funny because I always forget to celebrate the holidays unless it's Halloween. This is not my only holiday that I love.
Really?
Yeah. Because otherwise, Valentine's Day especially is like, for me, it's a crap holiday, man.
It's pretty much a crap holiday unless you buy one of my Muslim Valentine's Day cards, which I have available for sale today over there on the mantelpiece. So you can buy one for your loved ones. You know, once you start playing into the Hallmarkness of it all, it's fine. It's a great holiday. Capitalism wins.
See, okay, that's what I have a hard time with.
Yeah.
Is I don't play into the like Hallmarkness. I can't do it. You like lean into the Hallmark.
Well, I mean,
dive in, swim in, hot tub in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the cards say like, I have a jihad on for you. So it's not like it's that Hallmarky.
If I ever heard a lifetime line, there it is. I have a jihad on for you. My husband's in the crowd tonight. Give it up for my white man. No, that was a test. What are you doing? What are you doing? You know how much I have to undo now that you've done that? Okay, we're not like really chivalrous. And sometimes I try to like lean on my gender, you know, and be like, how come you didn't get me anything? You know, I don't know why that's my gendered voice. But like, okay, to give you an example, it was our 10th anniversary and we were walking to a Joann's Fabrics because we were on a Watch Lord of the Rings and crochet kick. And we were in the
park. Duncan was crocheting?
Yeah, he's really into it, man.
Oh.
And we were walking to the Joann's Fabric in the parking lot when we both realized it was our 10th anniversary.
Oh.
And at the same time, we turned to blame the other one. And we saw it in each other's eyes and went, oh, God damn it. It's pretty romantic.
That's romantic, yeah.
Hallmark, call me.
Hallmark, call me. I can make a whole, I have a whole bunch of cards available. I'm available for hire.
Give us some other taglines. What you got?
So this year I didn't make new cards just because I was so exhausted. But the three that I have for this year, which I didn't make into cards, but I just tweeted them. I have BDSM is sexy, but BDS is sexier. Right? My love for you is unmappable. It reaches from here to Ukraine.
Oh.
And this is a...
I like that one.
It's not mine. It's I do these Muslim V-Day card workshops. So this was from a student. And it was Bag Daddy. Which I thought was really funny. So I didn't make any this year, but those are the three I would have made if I had energy to make them this year. If I wasn't like always sick.
When you were a kid.
Yeah.
Did you guys also have that ritual of like exchanging cards?
No way. Mm-mm.
What?
I mean, like for us growing up, like I'd go to school and everyone's like, oh, I bought this box of pretty cards. And my mom's like, no, you have to make it yourself. Like my parents didn't know what Valentine's Day cards were. So then I had to like make crappy cards.
What did they say?
They probably didn't say anything. They were probably just hearts because I didn't know what I was doing. And then I saw like all the other kids had like really cool cartoon cards with Transformers or G.I. Joe or whatever. I was like, no, where's my, like, I want that. So it was like a process. I was the oldest. So it was a process to get the like nice cards. And then my sisters, of course, they got like whatever card they want because they're younger.
The oldest is the bridge.
Yep.
Who's the oldest in the crowd? Oh, there you are. You already were ready.
I'm a baby in a family.
Of course.
I don't like it when people give me advice. So many models of leadership. Such a drag.
Do you have stories from when you were a kid and going to school and having to give out Valentine's Day cards?
I have one traumatic one.
Yeah.
I share this one on our second episode, you guys. Our first episode was like an interview of me, basically. Mm-hmm. And that's when I learned that Taz is shy and wasn't going to, you know, interrupt me. And I'm a comedian. And
I call that polite. Same.
Fair. I'm a comedian and I call that, well, you don't like stage time? So then in our second episode, we had a conversation. It was really nice. And I mentioned this story. Okay, Tommy, wherever you are, you fuck. I was always cataloging white boys as a little kid.
Okay.
Don't listen to this part, honey. Because I was like looking at their joke capital because I really wanted to be funny as a kid. And like all the white boys in class in fifth grade were like effortlessly funny all the time. And everybody laughed whenever they said anything. And if I said it, people were just quiet. But whenever Tommy said it, everybody cracked up. And I was like, okay, I'm going to marry Tommy. I don't know why my like 10-year-old brain functioned in narrative propaganda. But I was like, beeline. I was like, okay, I got this. This is how I will. Because you know why else too is I moved around a lot. We talked about this.
Yeah.
And I wrote on a Valentine's Day card because he did help me a lot. Like, Tommy, thanks for really introducing me to all the kids in school and being my friend. Heart. That's neutral. But a heart's not neutral.
Heart's not neutral when you're a kid. Mm-mm.
Okay, so then
there's
in
all these
class,
messages.
Dude, he opens it up and just in a second goes, ew, Zara likes me.
Yeah, sounds right.
Okay, I learned after that that I was like, shit, I gotta just put a heart on everybody's. So I could just be like, it's not just for you, man.
I like
just,
everyone.
I like everybody. I just, you know, it was rough.
That's rough, yeah.
So you were already making cards.
I guess you're right. Yeah, I was already making cards. Though they were, oh my gosh, I don't even remember. They were like from construction scrap papers around the house or something. They weren't anything fancy.
Crayons.
But I have, you know, improved my game since then. So I don't feel, yeah.
Some paint.
Yeah, some paint.
Primer.
Yeah.
Maybe a gouache.
What's a gouache?
I don't know. I was hoping it would be a thing. But okay, so I have two questions. One, I want to know if you were a crayon kid or a marker kid. There to me feels like a distinction. And two is when you're making heart cards, you're making them. Like, wasn't there a Tommy that was like,
I don't know. I think, I mean,
because there's always like, I feel like little boys do this a lot where it's like, gross, you like me. And then like later it's like,
oh, I'm sure there must have been. I mean, okay, first crayons, because I think that's all my mom bought me. My mom wouldn't let us use markers because I had younger siblings and they would like write on the wall. So that was out.
I'm with your mom. Don't give kids markers.
I think the funny thing about like when you're a kid and you're handing out Valentine's Day cards, you know, like in the box cards, there are like the two big special ones, right? There's like all the small ones and there's two big ones. And it's like, who are you going to give the big ones to? And then you have to like be careful who's getting which cards because you don't want to send the wrong signal.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like subliminal. It's all subliminal, like subtext. It was like subtext before Twitter was around, subtweets. And then the popular kid would always get all the big cards. And then, like, sometimes, like, popular kids would get, like, two cards from the same person. You're like, oh.
What? Two cards from the same?
I know. That was the thing. And then, like.
No. One person gave them both a card, like, twice?
Yeah. People are like, oh, you know. Because they're, like, loved so much, you know. And it was like, you know, you empty out the paper bag on your desk and your pile's, like, small and, like, other people's piles so big.
Why do we have Valentine's Day?
Anyways, I have these Valentine's Day cards that'll like destroy the patriarchy.
Destroy the patriarchy. Valentine's also as a kid was when I started thinking about crushes.
Oh, okay.
Who was your first kid crush?
Oh my God. I think it was some guy in preschool, some boy. I don't remember. Boy? Who was your first crush?
Okay, so I didn't know that I was queer yet.
Okay.
So I didn't know that it was Hamburglar and the Grimace that I was actually really into. Super kinky.
Wait, who's the Grimace?
The big purple guy.
From
And they always like McDonald's? Did a dance together. They always were like, da, 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 and it sounded like dubstep in my head.
My first cartoon crush, I guess if you're going there, would be... would be Aladdin.
Oh.
But I feel like that goes for everyone. Did you hear that? Everyone in the room also agrees with me on that one.
Okay.
No one said that kind of noise for Grimace.
Maybe because they were just feeling it. Okay, Aladdin, when everybody was like swooning over Aladdin, that's when I knew I was not straight.
Okay.
Yeah. I just was like,
Because who were you crushing on from Aladdin?
Jafar. Just hands down. He had so much more going on.
I like how like
and he was so much smarter.
I like how you say that like your crush on Jafar means that you're queer.
Yeah, Jafar is super queer. Except that's not how my dad taught it to me. My dad told me Jafar was credit card debt. He was like, you know, you could end up with an Aladdin, a man who makes no money, and then you'll end up with Jafar, a bunch of credit card debt. Which is why he insisted that I get a PhD.
That's really funny.
When I was 10, yeah. I just had really different lessons than some folks.
Okay.
He was too pretty. Aladdin was too pretty.
No, oh, he was like the right enough of pretty for a cartoon. A cartoon.
I also had it for Zach the Lego Maniac. Do you guys remember him?
Zach. No, the room like is like divided because you could tell where the age maniac. Divide was right there.
Yeah. Zach the Lego Maniac. He like had Ray-Bans and he used to make like Lego cars and like Lego towns. And you'd be like, Zach? No, okay. I will masturbate to all of this.
Okay, so elections.
It's a perfect segue, actually, yeah.
It's our last episode, so this is my last opportunity to talk about the elections. It's a pretty important election year. It's 2020. We have a man in presidential office. We need to get out. We tried impeaching him. It didn't work. This week, we went through the process where Senate, the spineless Senate.
Spineless is a word.
Spineless is a good word.
I think more like treasonous.
Kept him in. How are you feeling about the state of politics right now, Zara?
About watching your government officials commit treason on television?
Yeah.
Not great.
Not great.
I thought it was just my thyroid. But it's the government. Okay, so also we have a split here.
Yeah, we do have a split. Which, I mean, people who have been listening know that there is a split.
Or are following me on my tags. So me and this side of the room, I guess, is Bernie.
Is this true?
Sanders, right?
Let's see a raise of hands.
There's so many hands raised for those of you listening. There's a sea of 1,000 Bernie supporters in this facility. Rise up, my friends. If you do any well actuallys at this party, we can't be friends. Okay? I'm speaking on behalf of all of us right now. Let me do right by us. No, that's too much pressure.
Side, yeah. I can't. And then I'm a Warren supporter. Are there Warren supporters here? Yeah. We got.
And okay. Then,
Biden supporters? Okay, good. Okay, I was just like, I wanted
down.
To have a conversation if there down. Was a Biden supporter. I don't understand why he's like number one in the polls.
Oh my God, I listened to The Daily where they interviewed a woman who was campaigning against Biden.
Yeah.
And she said, why would I vote for him? He broke our country with his accusation of impeachment.
Oh.
That was so many layers of pretzel wrong.
Yeah.
I could not wrap my brain around
what?
All of the misinformation.
Mm-hmm.
And also, that's not how government works. Yeah. It's intense out there.
Yeah, it is intense. I mean, I will vote for whoever becomes the Democratic person.
Anybody. The Rock is not running. I was disappointed.
I wonder if there is. There might be like a couple people. Yeah, there's like one or two. Wait, is Tulsi still in the running? Okay, if Tulsi makes it to the Democratic nominee, I'm not voting for her. I'm
really?
Just, yeah, I'm not voting for Tulsi. Tulsi's a trash politician.
Trash politician?
Yeah, and an Islamophobe.
Really?
So you don't want to support Tulsi.
I should probably read about it.
Yeah, you should read up on Tulsi's. So if she gets picked, definitely not. But most other candidates I will vote for.
Yeah, I mean, I see a lot of folks who are like, you know, what are Bernie like supporters are like, you know, on a like cloud thing, the way that they think, like blah, blah. That's how people write. I don't understand. Like, infrastructurally, stuff has to change, and, like, centrism isn't going to get us there. So I don't understand the Warren campaign.
I like how Warren talks about numbers. Like, it, to me, like, as a policy major, like, it just, like, her logic just kind of makes sense to me. Bernie's numbers just seem so extreme, but I don't know. Warren just makes sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we're at the point, like, primaries should be, like, who we want. Like, this primary season has been very vicious.
Yeah.
I mean, I got attacked by the Yang Gang this primary
yes.
season. And that was, like, stupid. Like, I don't understand it. And I don't think primary season should be so vicious. Like, we all have to vote for the same person in November anyway. So why not just make this – just vote for who you want to vote for versus making it so evil and contentious.
Yeah, actually, I learned that from you. Like, no, not the evil contentious. the unapologetically vote for who you want to vote for, because the primaries is when we shape a candidate.
Yeah.
And that was always really powerful for me to learn that from you, being across from you in this podcast.
Aw, thanks.
Yeah.
Look, Bernie and Warren supporters joining hands.
Despite the flu.
You know, this is our last episode. So we wanted to spend a little time talking about our favorite memories.
Memory lane.
Wait, do you have a song for that? No?
What you got?
Okay, I have top five. My first one is, we did an episode at Shangri-La, the museum out in Honolulu. And there was like this moment, we were there for like a week. And like,
yeah.
I was asked to like make a mixtape. So I got me a speaker and I was playing music on my laptop on the speaker, and it was nighttime and we're in this pool house and the waves are crashing and the pool is there. It was just like super glorious to be in this space. I mean, it was like also like really messed up too, because the museum was created because Doris Duke collected items from the Orient, right? So she like had marble that was from India, and she had a fireplace that was like from Iran, and she had just like different artifacts. And I was like, those are our things.
Yeah.
But then it was like so nice to also just like be there and be like, oh, we're like in the space with our stuff.
Yeah, I remember taking a selfie there and sending it to my dad, and he was like, what is this mock-up of Isfahan? Because Doris Duke had commissioned Iranian artists to create everything. So there was that authenticity to it, but it's still, you know, this like very wealthy white woman's collection. And it was just a real trip being there.
Such a trip.
But then I think we're thinking of the same moment of like, there was this one night that just felt so surreal.
Yeah, yeah.
Same moment.
I'm sure.
like you were playing your mixtape And I think it was a Doctors and Engineers song.
Yeah, I was playing like a lot of like Muslimish bands. It was like the Kaminas, Doctors and Engineers.
And it was blasting through this amp. And we're in this playhouse that looks like a mock-up of Esfahan's buildings. And we're on the coast of Hawaii. And the waves are crashing, like almost like to the beat of the music. Like it was just like, where are we? It was gorgeous. And it was such a replenishing getaway that we needed.
Yeah.
And I also got bit by a centipede.
And then a jellyfish.
And then a jellyfish. And I went to urgent care.
Oh, that's a good memory. Not a good memory, but like, I feel like every trip we've been on, Zara has been in urgent care.
I'm pretty positive I have. I think I've been in an urgent care in almost every state.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of digging it now, the urgent care tour. I've been to an urgent care in the airport in Arizona. Good job, Arizona. I was impressed. Wherever there's healthcare access, I'm for it. Just checking in. Also, the doctor like drew a line around my centipede bite because the other doctor hadn't. And then I went back to the first doctor and he was like, hey, somebody drew marker on you. I was like, who is this bro-y doctor? Doesn't know how to do his job.
It's Hawaii.
I'll go to Hawaii. My husband's up for residencies.
Hawaii.
We end up there. Yeah. Hey.
My next memory, which is not like an experience, but after Trump got elected, everyone was wearing those safety pins, you know, to show solidarity.
Why?
And it was like, it's ridiculous.
Oh, yeah. I also very much appreciated all the tweets that were like, I will hide you in my attic.
What? So then, like, if you go to our website, we now sell a safety pin for $2,000. And we put it up there, like, right after Trump got elected. No one has bought one yet. But
you will hide me in your attic, but you're not ready to fork over the $2,000 that I'm assuming you would have at least saved for my food and urgent care needs in your attic? I mean, come on. What kind of budgeting is this?
Yeah. I like that we did that.
That also sat for me as, like, a really intense moment where I've always needed this podcast. That day, I needed this podcast.
The episode after Trump got elected.
Yeah, I feel like there was this way that I was just containing and containing and containing and containing, and I was just holding it until I saw you.
Yeah, that was an intense one. Also, like, we've talked to people who've, like, say that they'll listen to our podcast in order. They'll, like, binge it from the beginning.
Oh, my God, why?
And then we're just like, why would you? They're like, listening to the year that Trump got elected, that whole campaign season, they say that it's like when you know something bad's going to happen and you want to like reach through the airwaves and tell them. They said that's what it feels like. They're like, you're so optimistic. You didn't know.
I do want to say, though, several of the folks who did binge it reached out to me and were like, Zara, you were right all along. Which, as a Persian woman spouting conspiracy theories, there is fewer things you could tell me that are sexy as fuck. Because at one point I said, the way that Trump behaves on stage is like he does not want to be there. He's so outside of his element. It feels like Putin's got like some tape hostage somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I said that in the past without knowledge of the future.
Foreshadowing.
Okay, what else you got? Memories?
Every time we would travel somewhere, like Zara and I would start like, I guess unintentionally or intentionally, we would start mimicking the accent of the region we were in.
Yeah, we'd just pick it up.
And then we got like really good at the, well, I don't know if we got good at it.
Yeah, but I don't know that we got good at it,
the
guys.
Minnesota accent was my favorite one. We did a live show in Minnesota at the University of Minnesota. And that
also
was fun.
I just really enjoyed that Lyft driver in Minnesota because he picked us up. And he didn't stop talking until he dropped us off.
But there was also a story.
It was one sentence.
Wasn't there like a psychic story that he had?
Yeah.
He said some weird story about something.
I don't remember.
Go listen to that episode. It's there.
That was fun, being in Minnesota. They also did a really excellent job of singing Creeping Sharia. That was probably the best one. And I was really impressed. And I realized later, it's because Minnesota has such strong support of their arts department. Everybody growing up there gets music lessons.
Oh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So they nailed it, man.
I like how that's where your mind went.
I'm always looking for ways that people aren't giving me my due.
Do you have other memories?
Yeah. We went to a total of 3 museums.
Yeah.
And for me, just like our museum tour is my favorite.
Yeah, they've been fun.
Because we both grew up like super nerds for museums.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So like being in museums like after closing, you know, like getting to see exhibits in the back and stuff, like that was so cool.
Yeah, the De Young Museum, we were there for their Muslim fashion exhibit. And so we got to like walk around, just like seeing like Muslim fashion being in a museum like that was really cool. And then like getting a special tour of that was amazing. Hanging out at the Aga Khan Museum, and that museum had so much like history, and it was so cool just to like sit there and just like
all the see Rumi things. Poetry. Mm-hmm.
What was the other museum?
The Shangri-La.
Oh yeah, of course.
Yeah, Shangri-La.
That was just like walking like a beauty ghost
everywhere. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was just like super surreal just to be there when everyone was gone. It was scary too.
It did feel pretty haunted.
Yeah.
It had that heaviness to it. And I think I cried maybe like the first 3 days there.
Yeah, it was a lot.
Because, okay, I was doing yoga with Adrian at that time.
Which is a YouTube channel, not an actual person.
Yeah.
But or a person on a YouTube channel and is very well known.
Yoga with Adrian is a very popular YouTube channel. And there was a Maghreb there and she had it on like the wrong side. It was facing the wrong direction because she used it as like a piece of art. And I was like in this moment doing yoga with Adrian, which like all the yoga poses were namaz. It was just all the prayer poses, you know? And then I was facing a Maghreb that was like in the wrong direction. And I just burst into tears. I was like, what am I doing? What is this? And like in that moment, I just was like, I can't do any form of prayer that's not my own.
Yeah, the place was, I mean, it's gorgeous. Y'all should absolutely go visit it. But it's like very moving and lots of feelings there.
Yes, complicated feelings.
I guess the Manzanar episode is one of my favorites. We got to go on the pilgrimage. And there was a museum involved there too. Yeah, we did the Manzanar Pilgrimage Day. Manzanar is where the Japanese were interned.
And I hear about that episode a lot.
Yeah. And I think for me, what I loved about that was I like went into it. Like I just had my recorder on me and I just kept recording tape and just talking to people for my own documentation because I wanted to like write an essay about it. And then listening back to the tape afterwards, I was like, wait a second, I want to use this. So then we like chopped it up and turned it into an episode and I loved it. Loved it.
Yeah, that also, talk about haunting moments, that stayed with me forever. There was so much like complicated beauty.
Yeah.
Right? Like the solidarity, also like seeing all the busloads of Muslim kids coming there who like were genuinely asking questions in the event of internment.
Yeah.
And just feeling the wind and dust and dirt in my hair and all over my face and just
hearing from the elders that were interned.
Yes.
That was also super moving too. And being able to share that, I think, also with all of our listeners was really great. Because I don't think that I feel like that's in LA, like it's such a like Asian American activist narrative. Like we all get to experience that together. But like that's not something that the rest of the country gets to hear. And so like it felt really good to like be able to like share this like solidarity story and then share it with all of our listeners.
Yeah. And so many powerful moments in our history.
I know.
And of course, for me, one that sits as a gorgeous memory is coming out on the podcast. That was intense.
Yeah, that was intense. That was unplanned.
Whoo! Yeah. Where's my queer pride in the house? Yeah. Oh, man. That was a terrifying day for me. And I was trying to figure out, like, how do I navigate this space as a, you know, passing woman, and also at the same time I can't speak on behalf of all queerness, like, you know, and at the same time, like, I can't keep quiet in a moment like this where you were talking about how there were all these Muslim folks who were standing in solidarity with the queer community while simultaneously silencing their own children as though they're not intersecting communities. And I was sitting there across from you feeling like I was silencing myself, and then I was like running the math. I was like, you know, I've had so many hard conversations with my parents. I can have this hard conversation with them. My parents' friends, they're going to be weird. So what? Like, I was trying to think, like, navigate the space of, like, you know, how do I be a good ally? And I'm like, but I'm not my own ally. Like, and I just burst out with it and didn't have anything else to say other than, but I'm gay, I'm bisexual, whatever you want to call it. And I'm married, and that's not an erasure. And that's all I got right now, folks. And that's it. And just walked around like, you know, and not knowing how to navigate this. And I wrote to Fazia because we met at the White House. That's where we met.
Yeah,
basically. And I was like, you know, I don't want to be a burden to my queer friends that are already going through so much and like not knowing how to navigate my feelings at all. And I was like, I'm going to ask Fazia. And she wrote back to me. She said, I just want to give you so many hugs right now. And I was like, oh, yeah, I'm going through a thing. And I just need a lot of hugging. And I just so appreciated having you and Quincy. I remember calling Quincy from Sundance. I was in Sundance. And saying, you know, if it sounds terrible and you need to delete it, you know. And he just said, it's a gorgeous, vulnerable moment, you know. And just feeling held by you, feeling held by him. And just, it gave me the space for everything that was going on for me to be in that and sit with that. And man, the most gorgeous hugs I've gotten in my life were after that episode.
Oh, yeah.
And fans who come up to me still and just, we see each other and they just burst into tears and I immediately burst into tears and it's just, I know. And knowing that I'm in a community where I have those kinds of mentors like Fazia and friends like Fazia and community that has been this podcast and our listeners and my fam, you, Quincy, everyone in this room who's been our fam, truly one of the greatest memories of being across from this table with you.
Oh, thanks. I'm glad that this podcast has done that for so many people. I think one of the things I wanted to say was that I think just like what you were saying was like just going to different places and having our fans like come up to us, like in the most unexpected places. They'll like recognize our voices or something. Like I've had that happen where like people are like, wait, your voice sounds really familiar. And they're like, wait, are you in a podcast? And I was just like, yes. And just like, just going across this country and just like, we have fans everywhere.
Yeah.
And it's been so cool to experience that.
We get letters from Brazil, Portugal.
Yeah. We haven't gone there to bump into those people, but you know, like the domestic ones we've bumped into. Yes. So I have a couple lessons I've learned from doing this show. The thing that I want to let our listeners leave with of lessons that I've learned that I hope that people will take forward in however they make art was the first one is like we worked really hard at recentering our narrative and just being unapologetic about that. You know, when we started this 5 years ago, like at our 6 month episode, like we had a moment where we were just like, because we were getting a lot of letters, fan letters by then, and they were like, can you please define your words before you say them?
Oh, yeah.
And we were just like, no, I don't want to. Like, I was very adamant. I was just like, I'm not defining, like, what is Ramadan for people every time I do this. Then it's just like, this isn't for you, for me to define. This is a show where I'm talking to people who are like me. If you want to listen to this show, you can, but I'm only asking questions if Zara has questions. I'm not here to answer questions for the white gaze. I'm here to answer questions for Zara's gaze. Mm-hmm. And like, I think like at that time, like it was so revolutionary. And I feel like we did a little trailblazing. Is that the word?
We trailblazed.
Because now there's like so many podcasts and storytellers that are out there like recentering their narrative. And like, this isn't like a big thing anymore. But like it was a lot of work. It was a lot of like intentionality when we started to make sure that happened.
That was a big lesson for me also.
Yeah.
Like, and also saying no to media.
Oh, yeah.
That was not a thing that I ever did.
Yeah.
Especially as a comic, because it was always like, you know, that dynamic of be grateful for whatever coverage you get. And I wasn't politicized in that kind of a way to be savvy around my PR. And it was really... I was really self-sequestering because I kept, like, getting my picture up in my comedy next to, like, the Arab Spring.
Yeah.
And to hear you say in our email sometimes, like, you know, no, I'm not interested at this time, was like, what?
It's because they were, like, you could tell by the media that request that we were getting, they were super orientalizing. And so, like, I was like, I'm not doing this. And then Zara was like, but I was like, no, we have to, like, choose how we want to be perceived and how we want to be heard. We can't be manipulated.
Yeah, that was huge for me. And the putting the boundary up about it, how much we educate, you know, and the ways that you did recenter, you know, where you say, okay, well, not this. This is what I do. Let's talk about this. You know, the pivot. Also, just as a comedian, being across from you and answering to the Taz gaze was was the like opportunity for me to actually find my material as a comic.
Yeah.
And now I tell so many comedians who are coming up to like find a podcast where you have that kind of partner, you know, because we need audience to find our content. But for me, every time I would perform, it was like Groundhog's Day over and over and over. I'm a feminist Muslim Iranian American comedian. Hi. Feminist Muslim Iranian American comedian. Hi. You know, so they could like put on their like bias glasses, you know, and place me as they wanted and needed to before I could open my mouth and tell them a joke, you know. But across from you, I could talk about anything. And I found so much more material that way.
And we were able to find like our community that way. Like,
yes.
Yeah. Cause you had to like explain yourself every time. And then now all of a sudden we have a community where we don't have to explain ourselves and we can just jump into the fun stuff, which is always so great. The other lesson that I have is one of the things that started happening, I think we started getting these letters like after Trump got elected, was we got a lot of people that were like, I don't have a lot of access to Muslim people and listening to your podcast, it's like I'm eavesdropping on a conversation that I'm not allowed to listen to. And I thought that was really interesting too, because I think in all the activism work that I do around solidarity, like there's this idea that we have to dumb down our message to reach the masses, to like build solidarity that way. And I think what I've really learned from this experience has been that we shouldn't dumb down ourselves to expect solidarity. We need to like speak at our level and just hope and just like expect our audience to be smart enough to do the Google, to do the research, you know, to like meet up with us. And I think it's worked. I think like it's a different way of thinking about solidarity, but I think like how great would it be if we just like allowed people to listen to ourselves in our honest way versus like a dumbed down version of us. Mm-hmm. Do you have any other lessons?
That time we were at the White House, that actually like was huge for me. Because we were there.
Me too.
Yeah. You won an award.
Yes.
And there were so many amazing things about that moment. So you were getting this White House Champion of Change Award. And in my world, in comedian land, that's like, it's changed a lot, you know, the terrain of comedy, which is pretty cool. At that time in 2015, not so long ago, it was still very elbows out. And for you to like ask them if we could record the podcast there and ask if I could come was like so huge. And is also such a signature of you and the way that you community build and expand access.
Yeah. I mean, but like, of course you were going to come with me and of course we were going to go to the White House together.
But that's not how I was used to, like, that's not dynamics I was used to seeing. Dynamics I was used to seeing was like, I went to the White House, I took interviews while I was there, and then let's inject them into the episode. You know, not taking two people together. And that was rad. Because, yeah, then it was the both of us and it gave me that access too.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. And so when I got invited to the Aga Khan Museum, then it was like that template for me.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, oh, I'm going to ask if we can also record the podcast there. I'm going to bring my sis. Also, you have two guys and me. Like, hello.
Yeah, I really like how we've been very intentional about using Shine Theory, a reference to Call Your Girlfriend podcast. Yay! Who really supported us through these 5 years. Their theory of like using opportunities to shine on other women. And I feel like we've been doing that a lot. Like we've been purposely shining on other Muslim women and all the work that we do, especially I feel it in our like, yeah, the Good Muslim Award. We definitely have been like shining a light there, which has been really great.
It was also just cool because everything that I learned was like either you're intentionally going into politics or you're going to tell your own stories that are going to sound like all the stories that Hollywood tells. But what you showed me that was possible was like we can actually tell our story, intend to educate no one, and still be there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Creating that change. So, you know, I mean, now everybody just does it, but I just want to say, hey.
You did it first. Okay. On that note, I think we should take a quick little break.
Yeah.
And then we'll come back for our short segments.
Woo!
But we're still here. And we're going strong.
It's an exciting time in Asian America. There are more movies, TV shows, books, and music reflecting us than ever. But all of these represent just a small slice of Asian American culture and experiences. So what do? tell more slices. Asian Americana is a show that explores these slices of distinctly Asian American culture and history. We've talked about how Chinese Americans built California's Sacramento Delta, the art scene turns gallery institution giant robot, a play that explores the lost Cambodian pop music of the 60s and 70s, and, of course, Boba, just to name a few stories. You can find Asian Americana at asianamericana.com or on your podcast app.
And we're back.
Welcome back. Woo!
Give it up to Shah Jahan Khan. Yeah. Who's gonna play our segment breaks for this recording? And first up, we got Creeping Sharia. I had no idea you planned all this.
Yeah.
And you had no idea that I have a tradition. I make every live audience sing Creeping Sharia with us. Let's see if we beat out Minnesota, right? Okay, here we go.
Pretty good.
Tacos, coffee, intermittent fasting, Scottish Muslim kilts, and electric guitars are ours. Creeping Sharia is the section about all the ways we're winning. What you got, Tess?
There's a picture of Trump that came out today where he has this like tan line that goes like this. I'm putting my finger around my face. So there's this like clear like demarcation of like the hijab that Trump wears.
I see it.
Yeah, you know? People on Muslim Twitter are calling it a hijabi tan line. And like, you know, you look at it and you're just like, I have so many questions about, like, he's obviously using a self-tanner, so is he doing it himself? Is he wearing a hijab when he self-tans? Like, why did they skip his ear? Why? There's so many whys. But I mean, hijabi tan line. He is a hijabi wearing Muslim.
At least when he gets a spray tan.
Yeah.
I also appreciate the gradient from the orange at the top that just kind of sunsets down. Soon to sunset on his presidency. Yes.
What you got?
Okay. So, turns out, you guys, my thyroid medication comes from a pig.
The one that you're taking right now?
I mean, I eat pork and I don't care.
Yeah.
I'm the pepperoni Muslim. So I'm kind of just like, you know what I mean? Like, anyway. Yeah. And then I also found out that a long time ago, before they had thyroid medication, if you had thyroid problems, you were supposed to eat the thyroid of a pig.
What?
I know.
So are you going to do it?
Just like go for it? Just like the jugular of a pig?
Yeah.
I'll just be like, I'm a Muslim voting for Bernie. And then I'll take a pig and just...
Like, if you go to, like, a butcher, I wonder if they, like, sell that part of a pig.
Just thyroids?
I mean, the neck. You could just have to eat the whole neck.
Like, if I'm just like, can I have a fried pig thyroid?
Fried neck?
Fried neck? Okay, well, there's the soft belly of pigs.
Right.
That the bacon lobby has, like, turned into.
The bacon lobby.
Okay, if you have been listening to the podcast, you know that Taz and the bacon lobby really go head to head.
Yeah, I have issues with the bacon lobby, which is a real thing.
Tell us.
I mean, the bacon lobby is a real thing. It just exists. It's forcing bacon on Americans worldwide.
The horrible, villainous people that go around forcing bacon on people.
Yeah.
I have so many feelings about that.
Yeah, I do too.
And I only eat their product because it tastes good.
Well, now you can say you eat their product because it's like good for your thyroid.
The neck specifically.
Yes.
Do I have to eat it raw?
No, I'm sure you can.
Because like, were people eating it? Like, that's trichinosis. So like, were people like, you fry it and then that gives you thyroid benefit? Is that how
it works? But is the medicine that you're taking, is that cooked? Like, they don't.
Cooked medicine?
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, if they're.
I mean, my meth is
how
cooked.
Does medicine work?
I'm not really sure.
I don't know. I've been sick for like 5 months. So like,
you might want to just go for it. You might want to just like get the thyroid of a pig.
And just eat it. And just be like, this is my goop care.
Yes. All right, should we go for the next one?
Yeah.
Awkward.
Wow.
Beautiful.
I have so many thoughts.
What's your awkward ask?
Okay, so I was in Mexico City for Christmas. And on Christmas Day, we went to the Ballet Folklorio, the folk ballet. And it was an interesting experience. Basically, they go through the whole story of Jesus and Mary on stage through ballet, which is an interesting experience for me as a Muslim because I don't know the story. So like I had to experience it through Mexican ballet. And I was following along, and then but then there were like some parts of it where I was just like really confused because they had like Aztec dancers come out for a while. And I was like, why are there Aztec dancers? Because I don't think they existed, you know, when Jesus was born. So I learned later that they were like trying to pull in all these folk dances together, right? They were just trying to like merge together Mexican folk's like, narrative and like Jesus being born. So anyways, like all of a sudden in the middle of that dance, there's like this like papier-mâché made large head of an Arab man with a hooked nose and super like caricature-like. And he's dancing on stage like in front of Jesus and Mary, Joseph and Mary and Jesus in the arm. So anyways, they're like, it's like this racist Arab trope, like just like walks on stage and I'm looking around at the audience and no one's saying anything. I was just like, what is happening? And like, I was like, I'm pretty sure this has nothing to do with this narrative of like nativity. I was just really confused by the whole thing. And then afterwards, I was just like, did anyone not see what I just saw? Isn't this like super awkward? And yeah, so that was, it wasn't an actual ask, but it was definitely me awkwardly asking everyone. I was like, did you not see how racist this was? I definitely have lots of pictures of it.
What did people say when you confronted them?
Well, like I didn't really confront too many people. I was just talking with my friends that I was with.
And Twitter.
And Twitter. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I think it like for me, it brought up this conversation of like American racialization and how I view racism and how I was a tourist in that situation coming to this other land. And I shouldn't be placing my like my tourist version of racism into this context. But at the same time, I was like, I still think it's wrong. And I was with like a few like racial justice folks. So like we had a really interesting conversation about it. But at the same time, I was like, this is just so wrong. But then at the same time, I was like, I want to write a Muslim Christmas rom-com about this because it would be so funny to write a whole narrative around like a character who's like, who's playing this character?
Would this be a sequel or like a brand new one?
Just a brand new one. I'm just going to do like, I'm going to be like Mary Higgins Clark and just like have different like.
Yes.
R.I.P. Mary Higgins Clark.
That's pretty awkward. Yeah. Okay. My awkward ask a Muslim. My lit agent keeps saying Muslim.
Just cash.
And she always like springs it on me like for your Muslim family. It makes me nauseous every time.
How does she say Iranian?
I think she says Iranian. I think I just dissociate. It hurts my ears every time. And especially because, like, I can hear Trump in it every time. Muslim. Like, ugh. And I'm like, do I need to write the email that's like, hey, by the way?
No, you have to say it confronted in person. If you write an email that you're saying it wrong, she's not going to, like, understand how to read what you said, wrote, and, like, interpret it correctly. She needs an audio lesson.
Maybe I can add a voice memo to it that's like, okay, so, like, you say it, like, Muslim. But it should be like,
you should just link this podcast. Hey, by the way, did you hear our last podcast?
Just tune in to this many minutes and I don't know, just some, you know, stuff. I feel like you might Muslim us.
For the record, how would you like her to say it?
Muslim? Muslim? I would even be okay with her saying Muslim the fabric. More than Muslim. You know what I mean? Like, I would rather her just accidentally, you know, call me like another religion than Muslim. Like, it just, I would rather somebody just say, I don't know what religion you are. And I don't know how to form the words in my mouth. Actually, you know what? I'm going to say, for me, on behalf of me, I would like for you, if you don't know how to pronounce a thing, to say the sentence, I don't know how to form this word in my mouth. And I will tell you.
Well, I hope you have that conversation with her.
Here behind this table, I'm very confident.
Yeah, this is, I mean, it's an awkward conversation to have.
That's why it's on our awkward ask a Muslim. All right, we got one more segment for you guys.
Two
more segments for you guys. Here goes.
It's fatwa time.
Yeah. What you got for fatwa time?
What have we been doing for 5 years?
Right?
I have like a few. I mean, generally, I'm so tired of being sick. I wanted a fatwa being sick. Mm. But I also want a fatwa. I think we're going to go with the census because the census has a section called Asian Indian, which is just so absurd. And I've been doing I did a little bit of research on it. And it became Asian Indian, I think, in the 1980s. And before, in the 1970s, if you were South Asian, you had to mark yourself as white. And then if it was, you went before that, it was Hindu was a category. So anyways, there's all these like it's just like improper categorization. So I want to fatwa the census for doing a very bad job on knowing the categories. And if you're not Asian Indian and you're like an other Asian, you're supposed to fill in your Asian name, right? So there's like 15 to 25 that like I came up with that I think should be like their own categories. I want to fatwa all that because this is like the same issue we had to deal with 10 years ago and 10 years before. And it's just ridiculous. And of course, we had no control over the census this year because of who's in presidency. So it's going to be a shit show. But when you fill out the census this year on April 1st, please fill out your other Asian category correctly.
All right.
Fill in Bangladeshi, Pakistani, whatever it is. Don't leave it blank. What's yours?
Okay. Mine is treason. I fatwa treason.
Well, yeah.
Don't do it.
It's the week for it. Don't do it.
Don't do it. Don't commit treason. Especially if you're a senator and this country's counting on you. Don't commit treason. Especially if you're a Republican and your voice matters enormously. Don't commit treason. GOP, don't commit treason.
Mashallah. Mashallah, you're amazing and fantastic. Good Muslim Award.
Give it up for Shash. This is our final segment is the Good Muslim Award segment.
I always love this segment because I felt like people were always giving Muslim Award. Like, Muslims are very tokenized in the media these days.
Are they?
And there's always like a handful of Muslims that were always given the award for being the good ones. And I feel like we've done a really good job in these 5 years of uplifting different kinds of Muslims into this world. And this is like our segment where we get to do it monthly. And it's been a lot of fun to honor our friends, many of who are in this room. And
there are a lot of good Muslim awards in this room.
And also like all these people that like we think are cool that like mainstream media isn't going to think is cool. So it's been a fun segment.
And it's been nice to not be the only one giving them out. You know what I mean? Like, it's the two of us.
Yeah.
You know? So, like,
less
I can.
Less pressure.
Yeah. Less pressure to be good with the Good Muslim Award. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, who do you want to give your award to?
Bernie Sanders.
He's not Muslim, Zara.
He is Muslimish.
I think he's Jewish.
He's Muslimish Jewish.
I think his campaign manager's campaign director is Muslim, right?
Works for me. He was on Hasan Minhaj's show, and Hasan said, you're kind of Muslimish. And he said, I've never been called that before. But okay. That's my impression.
Did he say okay like he accepted it or just like okay?
I don't remember. I was too excited.
Oh my gosh.
I dissociated with joy. I was just jumping up and down. Also because I was having these mixed like emotions because I learned from an Atlantic article. It said 32-minute read at the top, and I went for it. And it said that Trump has already invested $1 billion in campaign advertising. Already. Horrifying. And the deep fakes that they use and the like, while he's there being like, sure, yeah, okay. I was like, oh my God, what's the clip that they're going to send? Because on this podcast, we've covered whole campaigns that have been won on an anti-Muslim kick. That was the issue that people rally together on in some towns. It's terrifying. At the same time, it doesn't matter what we say. They're going to find a way to twist it. So we might as well be our truest self and be as loud as we can be and get out there.
Yeah, that's very dark, but yeah. It's a very negative take on how I would take it, but yes. Get out there. Get out there.
It sounds positive to me. In the apocalypse, I'll be singing. Go Muslim Bernie.
So this month, the Muslim ban was expanded to include more countries. I feel like it was like 7 more countries, mostly from Africa. And I want to give an award to all the people that have been fighting against the Muslim ban since January 2017.
Give it up for that. Yes.
There have been so many activists that have been like on the front line. I'm on like all these email chains constantly. And we're always trying to figure out like a different way to organize around it. And there's just like, I don't know, there's just like so many activists behind the scenes working so hard to fight not just the Muslim ban, but just like different issues on being Muslim American and unlike recognized people. People are just like grinding. So I want to give, I don't have any one person to give it to, but I want to give it to all of them because there's just so many that are doing work. And some of the best work are being done by people who we have no idea that they're doing the work for safety reasons. So I want to give my Good Muslim Award to all those folks.
And we're coming to the end of our show, Taz.
No.
Gosh, I went from 35 to 40 across from this girl, y'all. So I wrote you a song.
I heard. I mean.
I wrote you a song and I got one of your dearest friends to join in this mischief with me. And Scott Okamoto, who wanted to be here but couldn't because of the flu. Give it up for him. Who helped me write and mold and shape this song. I did not do this myself. And Shaj. And I'm going to let you take it away.
Shines and you realize the time has come to go. Guided by the starlit sky, girl, you got to go. A smile from a crescent moon follows you home. Brand new stage awaits you there, and again you know. Says I'm not ready yet, it's telling you to wait, but you're already through that door. Khudafiz, 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 khudafiz. Crescent moon smiling, this is a goodbye. Crescent moon smiling, this is a goodbye. Bright sign and you crystallize, the time has come to go. Chided by a moonlit smile, girl, you got to go. A mile from a friendly face, more than you would roam. A new mic stand awaits you there, and your fear it shows. A voice says I'm not ready yet, it's telling you to wait, but you're already through that door. Khudafiz, khudafiz, khudafiz. crescent moon smiling. Crescent moon smiling.
I feel like I should give a little backstory on the song.
Yeah.
So where it came from is one, some challenges were that I didn't even know if we'd make it in time to get the song. And huge shout out to Josh, who was up with me till 1:30 in the morning nailing it. And he nailed it. And so I was like, you know, going to have it as a surprise, but I didn't want to announce the surprise because what if I don't finish my homework in time? And at the same time, I also was trying to like write these lyrics and think about like Khodaf is in this moment for this podcast and for you and I. And one of the things we'd had to struggle with is, you know, assumptions that it's going to be catty, that it's like a catty breakup, or that one of us is leaving the other for some big dream, you know, some starlit sky that we can't enjoy together. And that's constantly the narrative that we have to recenter, right? Like, you've given me so much sisterhood. And in this adventure, I'm so grateful to be across from another badass woman who is not threatened by my badassness and I'm not threatened by her badassness, and we just wish each other awesomeness and more starlit skies and bright signs. And it was really scary for us to come to this moment. We both didn't know how to say we were ready for this moment. It was hard to say, but we were already kind of doing it. You know, we were already kind of through that door.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of it, we just knew we wished each other love. And we were ready to say Khoda Hafiz.
Mm-hmm.
And Khoda Hafiz translates to may Allah protect you. And to me, it sits as this like protection for me in that regard, as you're memorized by God out there in the world. And I couldn't think of a better send off to give you.
Aw, thanks. I think for me, like, I've been a part of so many projects that just kind of like fizzled or like they didn't get, like when I was on CP Mutiny, we were writing and then it just like the audience just kind of died out and there was no like celebration to end it. And then I do a lot of projects and I never have been part of a project where we could end it on our terms and where we can end it big like this, like with a celebration. I think that was so important to me that like there's so much power to be able to say like, no, we're going to actually just, we recognize that it's time and we're going to end it and we're going to celebrate the end. And sometimes projects need to come to an end. And that's like, we shouldn't like drag things on longer than it should be. And I feel like so good about that decision because I think it's so important. I feel like I'm so excited about that because we're doing this. This is so awesome. So, and it's so good to see, like, I'm pointing to the room because, like, everyone in this room has, like, really held us in place. This is our LA community. We kept this to our close friends because we knew that, like, we have counted on you for all these 5 years. And it's so special to do this last episode with all of you all in the room.
Give it up for you, fam.
Yeah.
There's so much love in this room right now. Everybody's
so
just glowing. We're all just gleaming.
And on that note, we have a Khodafiz cake coming our way.
Oh my God.
Well, thank you. We got a cake handed to us on our table. The cake has rose petals on it, and it says Khodafiz GMBM. And so pretty with all the rose petals. Thanks, y'all. So as we close out the podcast, where can people find us?
You can find me at ZaraComedian.com or my handle is @ZaraComedy.
Do you have anything you want to pitch?
Cake.
Cake.
Yeah.
I'm at Tazzy Star everywhere. And my site is tazzystar.me. And we'll definitely have projects. Buy my Muslim Valentine's Day cards. There's a bunch left.
Oh, I'm launching a Patreon. Give me money.
Yeah. Both of ours are capitalist related. Our site's still going to be up, so you can visit our site. We'll probably have some blogs updated here and there with our future projects. We're going to keep this feed open so that if we do have future podcasts coming through, we'll share some content here. We might share other... We'll keep it open, so don't unsubscribe just yet, because... we're going to keep it open for special projects for the future. But for now, I think it's time to bid all of y'all goodbye, listeners. Thank you so much for listening to us. There's been so many of you over the years, but thank you, thank you, thank you.
And may God protect you on your journey
to the office.
Thanks for listening to the Good Muslim, Bad Muslim podcast, hosted by Taz Ahmed and Zara Norbash. You can follow Taz on Twitter at Tazzystar, that's T-A-Z-Z-Y-S-T-A-R, and Zara at Zara Comedy, that's Z-A-H-R-A Comedy. The show is produced and edited by Quincy Sarasmith, and you can find us on the web at goodmuslimbadmuslim.com. To follow the conversation, please use the hashtag GoodMuslimBadMuslim.
Thank you, Evil Art Form Productions, for producing the song Khodafez, written by me, Zara Norbak, Shahjahan Khan, and Scott Okamoto. It'll be available on iTunes if you want to purchase it and support. Infinite thanks to Natasha Swani for so graciously hosting our live farewell episode, and Atsuko Okatsuka for all the chairs.
Good Muslim, Bad Muslim is a proud member of Potluck, a collective that features stories and voices from the Asian American community.
Holy
Potluck.
Potluck.
Ew, Zara likes me.